This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We're looking at cloudy skies today. It's 32 degrees right now at O'Hare, and we'll have the five-day forecast coming up.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Let's kick things off on a rocky day with an update from Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, it's getting harder and harder for the main averages to pull out a win on the year. Here's where we stand right now. The Dow is down 169 points, or 0.75%. We're down to 22,691. NASDAQ lower by 130 points, another 2% slide on the day. S&P falling 24 points. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index lower by 1.25%. For the week, the main average is falling between 6% and more than 7%. For the month now, the Dow and S&P lower by about 11.5%. The NASDAQ composite has fallen almost 13% in December. Orders for big-ticket durable goods rebounded in November after a big October decline. Demand for manufactured products meant to last 3 years or more, that's everything from appliances to cars to furniture, they were up 0.8% last month. And a slightly weaker advance in consumer spending pulled down the final revision of economic growth in the July through September period, GDP up at a 3.4% pace during the third quarter. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we're talking about the state of the economy. And the biggest shopping day of the year may actually turn out to be tomorrow.
It is Entrepreneur Friday. We will talk with a woman from the suburbs, built a business from scratch about three decades ago, how she made it last. Also, we'll talk about gasoline prices, what's to expect ahead of the holidays, especially as oil prices continue to fall. All of that and loads more coming up on today's Noon Business Hour, including some more analysis into these rocky markets as the week's about over.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Tomorrow is considered the final huge day of the holiday shopping season for retailers. We're going to cover that in our next segment. Right now, a very busy day of data while the market shutdown of the federal government is looming. We are joined by Robert Dye, Chief Economist at Comerica Bank in Dallas. Welcome back to the Noon Business, Robert. What do you have your eye on today?
Well, thank you, Chris. I think this is a collision of two different stories about the U.S. economy. And on the one hand, we see that current data is still pretty good. Labor market indicators are good. Various manufacturing indicators are good. But on the other hand, and that's the old economic joke, isn't it? We need a one-handed economist, but we have a two-handed economy. On the other hand, future-looking indicators, including the stock market, I know you've been covering that, and other warning signs are starting to appear on the horizon, and we're trying to figure out which story is right now. And I think the Federal Reserve is definitely caught right in the middle of that.
And does that mean that we're slipping possibly in the next year or so into recession?
Well, I would say that from a statistical point of view, and that's how economists look at it, that we have to say that the probabilities of recession are starting to increase. And if we say what are those over the next 12 months, I would say there's about a 1 out of 3 chance that we could go into recession in 2019. I'd say that's even higher for 2020. So we have to take these probabilities seriously.
What about the idea of a government shutdown? Is that something that's weighing at all on the markets? We expect the president to speak later on this hour about it.
Well, it certainly adds to a gloomy mood right now. In the short term, the government shutdown has very little effect on the broader economy. And I'm talking about a shutdown maybe measured in days or 1 to 2 weeks. It certainly has an impact on the 300,000, 400,000 federal government workers who could be a part of that. If the government shutdown were to go longer, it could sour business and investor confidence. It could create log jams through other non-defense government agencies, and that could start to have a cumulative drag. I don't think it'll go that long, but it definitely is adding to a sour mood right now.
And in general, investors would have to imagine that there will be more, whether it's about a government shutdown or something else, there will be more of this now that we're going to have a divided government with the Democrats taking over the House and the Republicans having the Senate and the White House.
Well, definitely. In that very contentious environment in Washington right now, we're going to be living with that. It doesn't necessarily have to result in a economy that is deteriorating. Sometimes, you know, when things don't get done in Washington, that's not a bad thing. But it looks right now that the government shutdown, the threat of it, the hawkish tone by the Federal Reserve we had earlier this week, both contributing to weak financial markets.
So what do you recommend to investors?
Well, I think recommending right now a little bit of caution in that we don't want to get overextended. Going into 2019, we could see ongoing volatility for a while. The bond market is readjusting almost daily with longer rates coming down, still some upper pressure on short-term rates. We're seeing the middle part of the yield curve flatten out. So there's a lot in play right now. And in an environment like that, I just don't think it's a good idea for anyone to stick their neck out too far.
Any areas that look as if they are going to make it through that you might want to invest in?
Well, you might look at some more conservative players right now, utilities. You look at the consumer sector, that even though there's a lot of turbulence out there, overall consumer conditions are good. Job creation has been good. Wages are coming up. Home equity is good. Savings rate is good. So that big inertial core part of the U.S. economy is still in very good shape, and I think that's a good place to really come back to that. You know, we're not sliding down the cliff, but I think we have some headwinds out there. But the core of the U.S. economy right now is still in very good shape.
Talk about the savings rate. It slipped a little bit as people are doing some holiday shopping and actually reaching for their credit cards. Is that, in the short run, as long as it doesn't get too far out of control, is that actually a good thing for the economy?
Yes, I think it is. And a 6% savings rate, we came down to about 6% in November. That's not a bad thing at all. It has gotten a lot lower than that prior to the Great Recession. We're down in the 3 to 2.5% range. And that's where consumers are really leaning over their skis. And that's not happening right now. We have an older consumer. We have a consumer that definitely knows what it's like to be leaning too far into the credit market. So I'm just not concerned about that in the near term.
And is there a chance that then trickles into the new year if they're feeling confident enough to overspend a little bit here at Christmas and other holidays? Maybe that confidence will allow them to continue their spending.
Well, that is part of the good news story, and that big core part, that 2/3 of the U.S. economy that's accounted for by consumer spending, looks like it's in pretty good shape right now, and that can help us get through some turbulence.
You talked about being conservative if you are going to be moving money around or investing, and I think you mentioned utilities as well. Utilities often a good dividend, a good income pick. Is that an area as people are looking, are they maybe looking for income now to ride this out?
Well, I think that could be a good area. But again, I'm looking at talking about sectors that may be able to ride through some volatility. We don't know how long the government shutdown, if it happens, how long it's going to last. We don't know simply how long the stock market correction. We're now, you know, nearly 3 months into this corrective phase, how long that's going to keep going. And so, again, I think that a little more caution is very prudent at this point.
Robert, thanks for joining us. Have a nice holiday. Robert Dye is chief economist at Comerica Bank in Dallas. Up next, a preview of what's being dubbed Super Saturday for retailers.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Tomorrow is Super Saturday, and it could top Black Friday for retailers. Joining us on the International Auto's Orland Park Business Line, Craig Johnson, President, Customer Growth Partners, based in New Canaan, Connecticut. Craig, a lot of people may not have heard that, Super Saturday. Tell us about that.
Well, for years, Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, was always the biggest retail day of the season and actually of the year. But beginning a few years ago, Super Saturday, which is the last Saturday before Christmas, has actually turned into the biggest one, and that's what we're seeing this year as well.
So why is that? Is it procrastinators? Why the change?
Well, I think it's a combination of two things. Certainly procrastinators is part of it, but also what's happened is that Black Friday itself has been diminished in importance because so many of the sales on Black Friday actually start either on Thanksgiving Day itself or even earlier that week. And so what happened is that all those sales migrate to earlier in that week, leaving Black Friday not quite as dominant as it has been. Plus the late procrastinators create Super Saturday.
We've also seen over the past year and the last several years the big box stores closing on many hands, and so what does that do to the turnout tomorrow?
Well, some of the department stores had a lot of trouble, Sears obviously included, in recent years, and so the capacity of those stores simply have not been able to compete as well. But the big boxers such as Walmart, Target, and Costco are going great guns. They've had very, very strong seasons.
Is this a year, when you look back at the year and the growth and how that has been, is this a year that you think has been pretty good?
Well, it has been pretty. In fact, it's been very good. It may not be great, but it's really very good. Last year, we had 5.3% growth for the holiday period, you know, the November-December period. And this year, we're predicting just under that, maybe 5.1%, 5.2%. And that's the sales rate today. We still have another, you know, 10 days left in the in the season. But this is the first time we've put together 2 5% plus growth things since before the recession, since the early 2000s. So this is really quite a good year.
Does the day that Christmas falls on, does that impact how big Super Saturday is? Say, for example, if Christmas is on a Sunday.
Well, then you do have an issue. If the Saturday is Christmas Eve, then a lot of people are traveling, you know, people are going to see visiting grandma and all that sort of stuff. Then Super Saturday is not the biggest day of the year. It's either the Saturday before that, or again, it's Black Friday. But that, of course, happens just, you know, once every 7 years about.
Is this where bricks and mortar really start to, if not catch up, at least have a pretty good season? Because if you're an online retailer, I mean, you can only deliver packages within a certain range. At some point, you may need to just run out and get something.
Well, and that's what a lot of people are doing. That's one of the reasons that Super Saturday is so big. You can still get stuff delivered by Christmas and Super Saturday, but either have to be an Amazon Prime member, or you have to pay a premium to get it there shipped if you order it as late as tomorrow afternoon, Saturday afternoon, in other words, on the 22nd. So that gives a premium, gives a booster to traditional brick and mortar stores, because you can either go straight into the store and buy what you want to buy, or you do what's known as click and collect. So you buy it online, and then they don't have enough time to ship it to you, but you go down to the nearest store and pick it up in person right there. And that can save. That's also a big booster.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Craig. Craig Johnson is president of Customer Growth Partners in New Canaan, Connecticut. And still ahead, Entrepreneur Friday, the woman behind a wood fabrication company. It's been doing business in the Chicago area for 3 decades. WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's take a look at those markets with Elisa Peretti.
Chris, we remain in the red. The Dow is down 105 points or 0.5% at 22,758. NASDAQ losing 1.5% or 104 points. The S&P retreating 17 points. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is falling more than 1%. Mall operators used to spurn pop-up stores, but not anymore. Bloomberg reports shopping center landlords are offering leases as short as 6 months as a way to fill empty storefronts, as many big retail chains have closed stores. We've got crude oil futures hanging on to a small gain, up about 0.33% at $46 a barrel. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Grain prices are mixed today. We have March corn up 3.5 at 378.75. March beans are down 8.75 at 897.5. And we have wheat for July down 9.75 at 528.5. Mixed across the board. This is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities and Normal. You can reach us at 800-779-1515.
Thank you, Pete. Live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time 1230. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are losing ground. We'll see what's moving the markets.
Gas prices in Illinois are lower than last year's holiday season. We'll get an update on oil.
Entrepreneur Friday, a woman who founded and has operated a company that's been selling industrial lumber and related materials for more than 30 years.
Cardinal Blaise Kusupich leads the funeral service for Chicago Police Officer Conrad Gary.
A midnight deadline approaches for a partial government shutdown. While there is a health update on Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, CBS News will have the latest.
Wall Street, the Dow down 143, the NASDAQ off 118, S&P 500 down by 21.
32 degrees in Chicagoland. It's 1231.
CBS News Special Report. President Trump met with Senate Republican leaders at the White House today, conceding a House-passed stopgap funding bill that cleared the House with $5 billion for a border wall likely will not get the 60 votes to clear the Senate. But
we are going to, one way or the other, we're going to get a wall, we're going to get a barrier, we're going to get anything you want to name it. You can name it anything you want.
Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
There's no sharp distinction between the proposal my friends across the aisle have decided to oppose today and proposals they've been happy to endorse in the past.
Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
President Trump, you will not get your wall. Abandon your shutdown strategy.
And the president wants the so-called nuclear option to require just a simple Senate majority. In other news, 85-year-old Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg had surgery today to remove cancerous growths from her left lung. CBS News Special Report, I'm Jim Chenevier.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
And we're with Hugh Johnson, Chairman and Chief Investment Officer at Hugh Johnson Advisors in Albany. Hugh, we just heard a little bit from CBS News about what's going on, the argument between the president. What does this do to confidence in the markets?
It doesn't do much for confidence, as you can well imagine. And some of us who look at these numbers pretty carefully get a little bit worried because, yes, we're talking about a government shutdown, and yes, we've seen government shutdowns in the past, but we have to keep in mind that this is not a trivial matter. We're talking about a very significant percentage of GDP. When we're talking about federal government spending is 7% of gross domestic product or 7% of our economy. If you shut down the federal government for an extended period of time, it takes a real chunk out of our economy and could lead us to, I don't want to say recession, but pretty close to it. And maybe that's just what the stock market has been signaling over the course of the last 3 months, or at least the last couple of weeks. Deep concern about the shutdown.
What do you see when a recession is looming? What are the signs?
Well, the first sign you see, and I hate to say it, is just the market itself. The stock market is declines. The stock market is a leading indicator of the economy. It's one of the 10 components of the index of leading economic indicators. And then there's a lot of other things that you start to see. You start to see very early in the game a deterioration in housing. And we're certainly seeing that right now. We're seeing prices continue to edge higher. But sales of existing homes, sales of new homes, housing starts, they're leveling off, if not declining. So you see that. You also see lots of things like specifics, especially building permits, another leading indicator of the economy. The yield curve, which is very technical, that tends to flatten, and that has been flattening. Again, all indications, technical indications of that, but indications that the economy and, importantly, earnings might be headed towards trouble.
So if you're an investor, what do you do? What kind of advice do you give people given all these indicators?
That's a great question, Cisco, and there's no easy answer to it except this. I would tell you that if, again, I go back to my sort of sleep-at-night strategy, and if you can't sleep at night, then you should reduce your exposure to stocks. So if you have 50 or 60% of your portfolio in stocks, don't take it all off the table. That's foolish. but get down to maybe something that you feel comfortable with. Maybe that's 40%. If you can sleep at night, keep in mind that over long periods of time, and I mean 10, 20 years, you're going to do quite well. You're going to go through a number of difficult periods, periods when the stock market goes down in a recession. You know, we're just, trees don't grow to the sky. But at that same time, you'll go through those periods of time and your portfolio is likely to experience some pretty solid rates of return. If I were to guess, and that's all it could be, I'd cross my fingers and say 8 to 10% in the equity component of your portfolio over a longer period of time, despite the fact you go through corrections that are severe and bear markets that are severe.
Now, you touched on the government shutdown. Given the fact that the Democrats are about to take over the House, there's going to be a lot of back and forth over the next 2 years between the House and the Senate and the White House. How can investors prepare for that, the fact that there's going to be even more uncertainty than normal out of Washington?
I don't think you can prepare for it. There's a lot of uncertainty, and uncertainty is a bad word for investors. That's usually going to weigh on the stock market. I wouldn't be surprised to see that weigh on the stock market for the next couple of years. And so, but, you know, I go back to the same thing I say. Well, it might weigh on the stock market, but let the stock market tell you what to do, number one. And number two, it really is the case that if you want to know what's going to be the impact on the economy, don't ask economists, don't read the newspapers, don't do any of that. Watch the stock market. The stock market will tell you whether we're headed towards difficult periods for the economy and earnings or not. And right now it's saying we may be headed towards a more difficult period, or the economy is not going to do as well as we've been expecting in 2019 and 2020. At some point it'll turn and give us a much more optimistic signal. So pay attention to the performance of the stock market.
And at this point, as we're looking at the stock market, is there an area in which you consider basically safe?
There's nothing safe. They all go down, but there's some things that outperform in a bear market or even in a stock market correction, and they've been doing so recently. Consumer staples, for example, is a sector of the market that does particularly well. Healthcare tends to do well. Telecommunications, and right at the top of the list in just about every bear market, the best performing sector are utilities. Those are safe sectors of the market. They offer attractive dividend yields. The dividends, of course, can be a cushion in a declining stock market environment. They're the defensive sectors, and so make sure you emphasize or overweight those sectors. But believe me, having a diversified portfolio with all sectors, underweighting the right ones, overweighting the right ones, is pretty important to managing your portfolio intelligently during a declining stock market environment.
Hugh Johnson, Chairman and Chief Investment Officer at Hugh Johnson Advisors in Albany. Always good insight. Hugh joining us today on the International Auto's Orland Park Business Line. Up next, Entrepreneur Friday, building an industrial lumber company from the ground up.
Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday. This afternoon, we are learning what it takes to build a successful company in industrial lumber and related building materials. We welcome Nancy G., founder and president of Maywood Industries in Alsip. Nancy, it's nice to meet you. We've been reading a little bit here about you, and you have taken this idea from a relative in your family. Your great-grandfather, was that it?
Correct. Went back clear into the 1800s. It was his concept.
So tell us about the concept, Maywood Industries. What do you do, and how'd you decide to do it?
Well, first of all, the company is we fabricate crates and pallets and cut the size material, plus I sell lumber and building-related materials. But back, oh my goodness, in the early 90s, we had been running a home center for probably over 70 years when the big boxes came in. The big boxes came in and a lot of us home centers went out. And it was at that crossroad that I decided I had to find something to do, and that's when I went back and picked up what my great-great-grandfather had done all those years ago in the 1800s. I had a few pieces of his equipment. I had some people who wanted to stay with me, and we decided to go back and reinvent the wheel, and that's what I did.
After the last recession about 10 years ago, did you find it difficult to get business at some point?
Oh, my goodness. Starting out from scratch, we actually had a trailer on a piece of land, and that's where we started. And, yeah, it was always very, very difficult, especially when you're starting out with absolutely a trailer on a piece of land. I mean, you have your borrowing powers, you have your insurance, you have your benefits for your employees. Yeah, it was difficult back in those days, and that was 35 years ago before when I opened this place.
So when we hear wood fabrication, a lot of people aren't sure what that really leads to. What are some of the products you make?
Well, we make crates, wooden boxes that ship materials overseas. We make specialty skids, unusual lengths and different sizes for people to send out manufacturing parts. We bring in materials, sheet good materials, and we cut them to size, whatever the specs are for the customer. And being a woman-owned company, I also deal with contractors here in Chicago selling lumber and all related building materials.
Now, speaking of being a woman-owned company, 30 years ago, was that maybe a little more challenging than it is today? Have you seen any evolution in that regard?
You know, I think it's actually gotten more difficult. Back then, I've been certified probably over 20-something years. It's a very tedious and hard process. And today, people are getting less and less involved in it because structurally, it's getting more difficult to become certified. They have clamped down and are doing a lot of audits and a lot of background checks. And so it's the paperwork is very tedious. So I'm personally can see a lot of companies that were certified, they're just giving up.
Well, what would you say to an entrepreneur, someone who wants to be an entrepreneur is listening to you right now? What would you say? Don't try it?
Oh, my goodness, no. That's not my ilk. No. I think every single person that sees something in their journey along the way or sees something that they would like to do, to go for it. And to always remember, always, that the challenges, you can get through them. You have to, just like our everyday life. When something comes up, you figure it out, and you go on. And I would definitely tell anybody, whether it's a new business, going into a business, some creative idea, if you have the energy, go for it.
What would you say to a young entrepreneur who thinks it's going to be a 9-to-5 job?
It's never a 9-to-5.
That was a setup.
That is not even a question. That is never, never, never. That is, for some people, that is hard. They like to go 9-to-5 and then have their other part of their life, where when you are an owner and an entrepreneur, it never stops. It's 24/7, 7 days a week. And even though our company is open all those hours, it's still, if we were closed, you just can't get away from it. It's just 24/7. Everything has to be taken care of.
Yeah, it's how you build something good, though, and it sounds like you have. Thanks for being with us, Nancy.
Thanks for being here,
Nancy. It's really encouraging. Nancy G., founder and president of Maywood Industries in Alsip. She's our Friday entrepreneur today. Still to come, why gas prices are dropping, and a look ahead to the coming year on oil.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
This portion of the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Elmhurst BMW. The millions of Americans hitting the road for Christmas are finding the price of gas is lower than a year ago. We're joined by Stephen Shorrock, who is publisher of the subscription-based oil trading newsletter, The Shorrock Report, in Villanova, Pennsylvania. Stephen, welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. This is good news for people who are driving cars, consumers, but what about the industry?
Right. It is good news on the head that it is that we're paying very low gasoline prices. But we have to keep in mind we've had a significant sell-off in crude oil, and crude oil is an industrial commodity. Therefore, we've also had significant sell-offs in all of the industrial metal prices. So that is not a good sign. It does not bode well for the economy. So I do appreciate that low gasoline prices are good. It's almost like a tax cut for the consumer. But my concern going into the new year is the sell-off, not only just in the crude oil complex, but in the entire industrial metals complex, does not bode well for the economy going into 2019.
And what can you explain why that gas is so low right now?
Absolutely. We've had a significant sell-off in crude oil prices, and crude oil generally accounts for 75% of your price. We have a number of situations, especially there in the Chicago area. We had the BP Whiting refinery, the Detroit Marathon refinery that were down for maintenance in the extended period during the fall, but they're back up online. But they buy a lot of the oil from Canada. In Canada, because of the decoupling with pipelines, that there is a glut of supply in Canada. So the oil going into these refineries, especially DP Whiting, is very well below the global price. So these refineries are paying already low prices for oil, and then that's been exacerbated by the global sell-off in prices. So motorists in the Chicago area are benefiting from the glut of supply in Canada, which is keeping oil prices, which are already low, even lower in the Midwest.
Is more production in general in the U.S., is that also helped some of that to keep prices lower?
Absolutely. So right now, and there was the great fanfare a couple of weeks ago in the weekly inventory reports for the first time in probably recorded memory. So the last 75 years of the U.S. being a hydrocarbon economy, that you had the U.S. as a net exporter. That means that crude oil, exports of crude oil, gasoline, jet fuel, diesel fuel, so forth, net, we shipped out more molecules than we shipped in. So certainly with the production, and we want to keep in mind that about 15 months ago is when oil prices really began to break that $50-$55 range. And at the same time, we saw heavy selling, heavy hedging by producers, locking in forward production at $55 a barrel. So if the producer is locking in oil at $55 a barrel, oil today at $45 a barrel with their marginal cost of production, we're probably pushing the line as far as refinery economics, production economics go. But we've had the opportunity all summer long, oil prices were $65, $70, $75 a barrel. So refiners had an opportunity throughout the summer to lock in this 2019's production at very high levels. So the production here in the United States will remain stout, and certainly that will help quell any significant rallies for at least the first half of 2019.
You touched on the fact that it's kind of like a tax cut for consumers because the price at the pump is cheaper. Is there any way that that money being spent could help the industry that's hurting by this, or is that money normally spent in other areas really doesn't have an impact?
It doesn't. It normally, it's more a benefit to retailers, and given that 66-70% of the U.S. economy is consumer spending, so it's generally a good sign for consumer spending. So it's generally a good sign for the economy as a whole when fewer of your dollars have to go into the gas tank and can be spent elsewhere. But my concern is similar to what we had back in 2015 when oil prices had crashed and gasoline prices crashed, national average actually for a while was below $2 a gallon. That was a symptom of a general weakening in the economy. And I'm just fearful with the ongoing trade rift between Washington and Beijing, the inversion of the yield curve, which is highly correlated as a precursor to recession, that there are some headwinds in the economy that these low gasoline prices are sending us right now. So therefore, enjoy these low gasoline prices, but really don't hope they last very long. Because if they do, then I think that's indicative of bigger problems for the economy in general.
So, we'll put that on our watch list. Thanks so much for joining us today. All the information, Stephen Shork is publisher of the subscription-based oil trading newsletter, The Shork Report, in Villanova, Pennsylvania. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55, wrapping up the Noon Business Hour with a check of Wall Street at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, Wall Street is continuing its slide with the Dow down 165 points. We're down to 22,700. NASDAQ falling 123 points or almost 2% on the day. S&P falling 23 points and the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg lower by 1.25%. Tech stocks are getting hammered. The FANG stocks, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google parent Alphabet are on track for their lowest close in months. Facebook is the worst performer in the group. Its shares are dropping more than 4%. Facebook shares have lost about 40% of their value since they set a record in July. Being a shopping mall Santa is hazardous to your health. Sick kids and leaky diapers can spread germs. Long days sitting in a hot suit can result in back problems and overheating. And lifting kids isn't easy. The head of Denver's professional Santa Claus school urges parents not to take sick kids to visit Santa and says Santa should drink lots of water, change their gloves frequently, and use hand sanitizer. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.